5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, oh, what a thrill. Goodness, it's your wreck, it's just quitting balls of fire.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the new Panic Room, and it is the, well, the 5th of August already, why not? And it is episode 141, 9:30 Central Time, and It's been a couple of weeks. Obviously, we missed last week. The guests couldn't be bothered to turn up, so we had a night off, Xtina and I. It's funny, on the last show 2 weeks ago, finished the show, managed to crawl into bed for all of half an hour, and then my dog decided to have her puppies, so we were up all, me and my daughter were up all night having puppies, which was great. So anybody out there in listener land want a puppy, just call in, you know, free puppy for the first 6 callers. I have missed her. I have, because I didn't get to speak to her last week, so I'm going to bring her straight on.
Thank you.
Christina, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm good. I am good. You know, I feel more scattered than normal, so, you know, bear with me tonight. I don't know why.
You're scattered. Yes, seriously. I'm in the middle of moving house. In fact, this is a monumental occasion as well. We're surrounded by puppies. The last broadcast from my wee house. Me and the kids are moving to our. To be fair, from my bedroom, which is, and the dogs are on the bed looking at me like, who the hell are you talking to, you crazy person? we're moving to our colonial mansion, because we're moneyed people now, apparently. not really. I mean, after this fucking move, we're not. But yes, and I'm actually going to have an office again. I'll have my own office studio to broadcast on. So, woohoo! It's kind of an end of an era and what have you. But I was telling you, today I had a... It's kind of poignant because my internet died. And again, thank you very much to your boyfriend, Christian, for literally saving my... I'm just going to die. My internet wouldn't work. It's only when that happens, and it's not like, oh, the internet's... or whatever, I phone Xfinity and, oh, everything's all right. The guy's in Calcutta. How the fuck does he know, when you can't really figure, what the hell is it? This is broken forever. And I was just sat, I thought, what am I going to do? I literally can't function. Now, the internet, very quickly, certainly in our lifetime, has gone from being handed device, to view pornography into something that we are totally and wholly dependent on, which is scary. Whole life revolves around this screen and everything on it, on my little screen. Only my little screen was when my phone was working, but I thought, I can't spend the rest of my life doing everything I need to do on my fucking phone, but it got me thinking as well, because throughout history, pornography has driven many industries. The publishing industry. Publishing was driven by pornography. Movie industry, specifically when it got into the home movie industry and videos, driven by pornography. Mm-hmm. The internet only developed as rapidly as it did because of pornography. And it's funny, you traced it back in the early days of publishing. When the little used to do the little wood engravings, the lithographs and that. And I will guarantee, as soon as they figured out the technology, I'm going to put tits on this, Oh, let's knob. Take it even further back, the cave paintings in La Salle, the cave painting. In fact, the primitive man, get this bit of soot, right, and I can make markings on the cave wall. I've done tits, look at this. Boobies, and it's literally rapid from there into obviously high-end printing, etc. I've got a photograph because, as soon as the camera was invented, they were photographing bare ladies, and then, bare ladies, they've got to be in colour. We've got to have colour bare ladies, we've got to have breasts in colour. And they've got to be, wouldn't it be great if they moved? Yeah. So, cinema was invented for pornography, and it's literally the need to see naked people has driven human society so quickly and so far. And it's funny, I remember reading a story, this is back in, must have been in middle school, I think it was a Whitley Strieber short story. I was a big fan of it in the day. And it was about a little invention. This is going back, it was... I guess in the 50s, 60s, a little invention the guy had, and it sat on his shoulder, called it bar, and it sat on his shoulder, and it originally started off as like a reminder, like an alarm. It would just give him a little poke in the neck, alarm, you need to be here, you need to do this, you need to call this person. And this thing developed, as they developed the technology, and it eventually became, instead of just being that little reminder thing, it became, but the man became the slave, or man became the slave to this thing. Became a sentient being, mm-hmm. it had a mind. This is sounding familiar, isn't it? This thing
is
the fountain of all knowledge, and man relied totally and entirely upon this gadget that sat on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And we all have one. Look to your right, look to your left. You've got one. I've got mine here. Charging, and that's a satisfying thing, because for as powerful as this thing is, and it's got more computing power than it took to get man on the moon, yeah, but if I didn't stick that little charging cord up its arse every night, it'd die. That's power, ladies and gentlemen. That is absolute. Yeah. So we are in the day we invent a everlasting battery, mankind is finished. And I think it's. I think that. I used to work for Duracell many, many years ago. The technology is battery technology. Again, that powered the mobile revolution. Had it not been for battery technology advancing, getting smaller and more powerful and lasting longer, than that it would never. We wouldn't be able to. It wouldn't happen. I would have to carry a battery around like in the old days, you know. but I think, you know, like this. Oh, you know, the water. Car, the water-driven engine is already there, but for obvious reasons, because global economies run on, they just keep it under wraps. I think it's the same with the everlasting battery. It's there.
Yeah.
Somebody has designed.
I don't doubt it.
This thing, and it is there, and it exists. And but the minute they brought this out, all the battery companies would just die on their arses, you know. So interesting. Oh yeah. So while ever they rely on us to charge them up, you know, we still have some control over our lives. But it's being eroded. It really is being eroded. You know, we are going to end up being literally. You know, our role on the planet will be just to charge up mobile devices,
unplugging
electric cars. That's all we're going to be.
Talking about, you know, how, you know, frazzled you were when you thought the internet, a problem with the internet, and yeah.
I wasn't frazzled.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Suicidal.
Okay. My phone died, not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before that. And, you know, after like three trips to the phone replacement place, you know, the first time, well, it's a battery. We have to order it. It'll be in 4 days, because this was Saturday, and they weren't going to get it in until Tuesday. Tuesday, no phone call. Wednesday, they said it's out for delivery, but it didn't show up yet. So finally Thursday, last Thursday, we're like, yes, it's here. And they're like, well, we have good news and bad news, or something like that. It wasn't the battery. So they have some other part they had to, you know, and after that, they're like, sorry, it's the motherboard. We can send it out for 3 to 4 weeks. Meanwhile, I've been without a phone for this whole time. And, you know, I think I did really well. I mean, I did get one the other day, so the crisis is over. But I think I did really well. You know, there were times where I would just get like, oh, my gosh. You know, and then, of course, you know, you have some people that are like, oh, I could do that. No problem at all. Okay, well, give me your fucking phone then. Let's try this. Let's see if you can do it. It's not as easy as you think, but
without your phone, you know, what do you do when you sit on the toilet?
I know. I had to bring a real book with me.
Oh my goodness me!
So when I close the laptop down, it's like that was it. I had no more communication. And it's a weird feeling. At first it was kind of, oh, God, what am I missing? What's going on that I'm not there for? But then the days went on, and I was like, this is nice. This is kind of quiet. I kind of like this.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Well,
the problem is, it's more than just, oh, I've got to keep social media. You know, for you and for me, you know, it's work, you know. I don't want to call, because it could be work, it could be business, it could be a client.
Yep.
I got clients who, you know, if I don't pick up straight away, they get pissy. Why haven't you not answered your phone?
Yeah.
I had one client who was really, he phoned, and then he phoned, I was actually driving. And here, Texas, I mean, this is Texas, they catch you on your phone while you're driving, they shoot you in the face. you know, I mean, joking aside, they are very, very tough on you know, that sort of on phone use in the cars. So I didn't answer it. Then he texted, why did you not answer your phone? Because I was driving. I didn't want to get my license taken away from me in a massive fine. And apparently where he is, the police are a lot more lenient. And now I have this little thing for my insurance company that monitors my drive to keep my, I get 8% reduction on my premium. And that monitors things like phone use and accelerating and braking and all this lot. So I've got to be very good.
Yeah.
But in, and now I see people driving around, usually, but somebody nearly ran me off the road the other day because they were on their bastard phone. And I do now, they're on the phone having this conversation, and so I pull up, right, you know, drive right alongside them and stick my horn on, blare my horn really loudly while they're trying to have a phone, and they look at me like, you know, but I hate those people. So so what have we got in the... What have we got on the show this evening, Xtina? Do tell.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we just need a whole hour just to, just to ourselves. And
just have a good old rant. I think we should.
We definitely need one, yeah. But no, you know, in the past, like, couple of months or so, I've been really looking at the horror groups that I belong to on Facebook, and I have been seeing, you know, a couple of the same names, like, over and over again, and I'm like, man, I have to get them on the show. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had Felix Blackwell on, and I'm really excited because I've seen so much about him. So another guy here that I'm really excited about because I've seen his name over and over, and I'm like, I have to get him. And I contacted him, and he said yes, and I said yay. So I'm very excited. So yeah,
brilliant.
This week on the Panic Room, we have. Oh, go ahead. What now?
Let's go and introduce. That was such a great build up. I think you should need to introduce him straight away. We'll bring him on.
All right. This week on the Panic Room, we have horror author and podcaster, author Aaron Beauregard.
Woo! Hello!
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
I know. Hey, thank you for your patience while we had a good old rant.
Yeah, Some good content in there for sure. Some hot topics.
Oh, indeed. I didn't even get started on how useless USPS are. Listen, I've been waiting for delivery all day, and it was 9 o'clock today. And I've just checked, and we attempted delivery. I'm in. I'm literally 5 yards away, but not even that. Probably about 10 feet away from my front door. I'm in, and now we couldn't deliver it. What the seriously, people? Do you know? But I'm beside myself. Aaron, you're here to talk to us about your book, Son of the Slob. Now, I have to say, the cover art for The Slob and Son of the Slob is phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, who does your cover art? Just a matter of interest, so we can steal them.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, and cover is something I definitely take a lot of time on because I'm just personally like one of those people that sort of judges a book by its cover. So I think, you know, for me, it's always an important thing. It's a really exciting thing, too. I always look forward to getting my art reveal, and I write, like, pages about what I want. As you can kind of see, that he puts a lot of great details and does a great job of bringing the vision to life. But it's absolutely. Anton Rozovsky, and he's an incredible talent. He also does all the illustrations for almost all of my books, because all of my books' interiors are also illustrated.
Oh, fantastic.
Wow.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it's good. I mean, we Hellbound, you know, we have a bunch of sort of go-to artists. You know, we like to expand that circle, but when you find a really good one, you hold on to them, I find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Son of the Slob, and obviously, you know, taken obviously the sequel to The Slob. I mean, tell us a bit more about it.
Well, Son of the Slob was something that I had been thinking about doing for a while. Actually, even after the initial book's relatively short, it's novella length. So when I had finished it, I was like, you know, there definitely, and I kind of, the way it ends, not to give any spoilers away, but it's kind of, it leaves obviously something for a sequel. And it just felt like there was a lot of meat on the bone with the story. And those characters in particular, if you read a lot of the reviews, I noticed that people got incredibly attached to the main character, Vera. And I just knew I had to kind of continue it. And I had an idea for how I wanted it to go. But it really just all sort of came together. And honestly, I think I wrote the book maybe in like 4 weeks or something. I just
steamrolled
it. And I was just totally
now,
in the zone
you,
with
it,
that one.
No, would you, it, that, and I hesitated, would you, is it horror or bizarro or like a mixture? I mean, looking at the covers, it looked like bizarro, but I wasn't sure, so I'm asking.
No, it's a good question. You wouldn't be the first person to ask that question either. I think the covers sort of leave that open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority of the book is grounded. And there are some small elements that I think people consider to be a little bit fantastical, but mm-hmm. overall, I personally find the most disturbing horror for me is the stuff that is very relatable, could potentially
yeah.
happen in real life. You know, that just that's the stuff I more connect with. Don't get me wrong, I do like the paranormal stuff too, and I do plan to explore that more as I continue to write. But
mm-hmm.
that's always been my go-to and sort of thing that bothers me, you know?
Definitely. I mean, I have read some really, really interesting bizarro. And what I think I find most interesting about it is that it just, there's no explanation of why this is happening or, you know, some of the crazier things. It just is. And I mean, because I'm one of the people too that I need it to be believable, you know, I mean, but I think that's one of the reasons I did kind of like, you know, when I was reading Bizarro, because you can just let your imagination go wild and anything goes really. So, I mean,
absolutely.
I don't think I could write it myself just because I don't know. I say I don't have a great imagination, but because I don't think like that, I guess. I do very much think in the...
No,
you
I mean,
know,
to be
what,
fair, Alex, I mean, you know, anybody who's read your poetry, you have a phenomenal imagination. Maybe you've not got the correct, you know, sort of sick imagination that bizarro writers,
right,
you know,
right.
have. And I love writing bizarro, reading it, because it's just no filters. As you know, I have very few filters in real life anyway. To be able to write like that is so liberating.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead,
Aaron.
I was just going to say, no, I completely agree, James. You're given a lot more rope, right, and freedom when you take mm-hmm. that path. You know, and so it has its own benefits. And some of my books, like I wrote one called Hallucinations, that's a short story collection all based off of my experiences on LSD and shrooms and stuff like that.
Wow.
And, you know, obviously
Brilliant.
That's going to go fucking crazy. And then you guys actually published one of my Bizarro stories in the anthology of Bizarro
mm-hmm.
that was called Some Girl. And, you guys actually allowed me to put illustrations in it too, which I thought was pretty cool.
Of course.
I have the book on myself.
We are pretty cool anyway, obviously, you know, but, yeah.
We like to think so, yeah.
Oh, yes, of course
we definitely
we
like to think so. But
what was the experience?
I was going to say, the slob, some of the slob, I mean, I hate to ask. I dread to ask. Who is your inspiration for the for those characters? Is it someone you know?
No. I wouldn't say it's anyone that I know. Now, the environment itself in the books is
mm-hmm.
inspired by things that I've been around in different scenarios. Out of respect, I don't go into that in detail, you know what I mean? Because, you know, some of these surroundings are quite appalling. So I'll just say that, yes, a lot of these both of those books are very personal books in some ways. You know, maybe that's why they've connected with people the most. I'm not sure. But the inspiration for the actual slob and the son of the slob themselves, though, that's just something from my – that's just pure imagination, you know, as far as how the characters are described and the nauseating details behind each of them.
I'm excited, and I want to hear more. Do we have a – yeah, we do. We have an excerpt to play, don't we, James?
We do, but I just need to find it. It's on my list here, so I did. I promise. She said, you've got to download this. And, again, as always, it's like 10 minutes before the show starts. So do you need to set up the excerpt, Aaron, or do we just hit play here?
Well, I'll say that the excerpt is from Son of the Slob, which, you know, it's obviously the follow-up book that was just released. And this chapter is called The Human Litter, and it's a short chapter, and it's sort of just when the reader's getting their first contact with Harold, and that is the main character, Vera's son, and we understand all the different problems that that this family has, you know, and I guess that's the setup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right. We shall play the clip.
The human litter. The cesspool of salty sin that was home stood before me. Inside, I wished it didn't. I don't believe in parallel universes, but I wish that I did. I wish this dreadful place could just magically disappear and I could wake up in someone else's skin. The version of me where things had gone as planned. The once pristine conditions had all but wilted away. The only things that remained were the fear and uncertainty, the sour and moldy flavor of depression, the downright obscurity and utter madness that was a normal evening in our strange hemisphere. I wasn't so blind that I couldn't remember. Most times, I just tried not to. What unspeakable horror would I find this time? Only my imagination could put a cap on it, and over time, with my mind constantly racing through a steaming buffet of awful outcomes, I knew the possibilities were endless. I looked back at the sun setting each night before I entered, wondering how many more I would get to take in. What measure of mortality remained in the morbid snow globe that I was trapped inside of? It felt heavy and daunting when I estimated. Much of me had given up on the ludicrous happy endings I often fabricated in my mind. The fantasy could never manifest. The dreams always mutated into a nightmare halfway through. How much longer can the pain go on? How bad can life get? As I broke the threshold, the weight got heavier. My shoulders ached. My spine compressed. My intestines turned to worms, flailing inside like they'd been lit on fire. I had the feeling. It was impossible to explain properly unless you've had it yourself. It borders on paranormal. You're immersed in whatever mundane task is at hand, and suddenly, all is wrong. The pit of your stomach is like a fucking jackhammer pumping wildly. It's like you need to puke, but you can't. You don't need someone to tell you that something horrific has happened. There isn't a doubt in the world. It's the same feeling I got the morning when my sister Lisa shot herself in the head. I can still see my sister's vessel, bulging eyeball volleyed out of her skull, winking at me while jammed in the grimy heating vent, the darkness of her skull splattered all over. While her soul had finally escaped to go wherever souls go, her pulpy, corrupted cranium was left behind. It was for me to deal with. For me to scrub into oblivion. In a way, it was sad. Lisa and I had our issues, but erasing the final physical traces of your only sibling is a melancholic conclusion that will never leave you. Once Lisa was dead, the feeling was all I had left. The wicked enlightenment that a profound dread is always in the background, lying in wait, ready to suffocate you at a moment's notice. After you've tasted it, you can't forget it. You can't shake it. It stays with you. It becomes you. Because you know it's always lurking, and at any moment, the morose antenna can raise itself and point toward the patch of plantation where the next grave will be dug. The sick thing is, I don't even fear the feeling anymore. I couldn't be bothered. I've been completely desensitized. The truth is, I'm so twisted up that my own instincts can no longer be trusted. Because I digest that feeling ritualistically, like the hypnotic pounding of the drum skin by a follower, it was constant, as dependable as rain on a shitty morning, because every day is the worst day ever. The gyrating gut worms reached their pinnacle as I looked at Daniel's closed bedroom door and quickly moved to the one beside it. A slice of orange light leaked through Harold's cracked door. It was calling me. I could hear a rustling noise close to me. It sounded different than the vermin sifting through the garbage piles in search of a fermented snack. It was spilling out from Harold's room. It was coming right at me. I crept up to the door and gently nestled my body against the framework, diligent in doing it silently and remaining unnoticed. His state of being required the snooping. My son had issues that needed to be closely monitored. It feels wrong saying it, but I've accepted that he's different. I had no other choice. His deformities leave him a far cry from normalcy and a distant scream from sensible. I've accepted that at times I need to study Harold anonymously like a zoologist would an exotic species of animal. When I peered into his room, I saw his oversized face and blubber-insulated neck. It was eerily backlit, leaving a shroud of darkness covering his facial features. His glowing yellow eyes twinkled with mischief as the cloudy bulb of nightlight reflected off of them. His obesity was disturbing. A child that was merely 7 years old, but looked closer to the age of a sixth grader. Every time I laid eyes on Harold, I was reminded of how unsightly his appearance was. He was the definition of abnormal. The poor child's hair was brown with a medium length, but he was born balding, like he exited the womb in the clutches of a midlife crisis. While hair was missing from his skull amid other taken-for-granted factory-installed faculties, in a cruel genetic joke, it had decided to sprout from other areas. His face had a 5 o'clock shadow that could get served at any watering hole had it not been sitting on his morbidly obese but still obviously adolescent frame. The whimsical puberty push gave him a freak show quality, but not more than the follicles that were growing through the strange tops of both of his hands. The ape-like feature only further justified the animal correlation, not to mention his current action. As Harold's wide waist and beefy rump sat on a soiled shag rug, I didn't want to watch, but I knew I had to. He shouldn't have required diapers at the age of 7, but he did. He shouldn't have had his diaper off and a nutty line of bodily fudge caked against his bare backside, but he did. He shouldn't have the diaper sitting on the ground in front of him and the warm, murky excrement compressing between his palms, but he did. The consistency of the fecal matter was too lax to be molded into whatever construction his unsound mind had conjured. Instead, the activity just made him look like some kind of deranged savage that was playing in the mud. I didn't notice the brown traces that rimmed his oversized lips initially. I didn't realize what that meant until he scooped up as much as he could with those hairy paws of his and unhinged his jaws. The gunky exit material invaded his mandible to the point of overflow. As he chewed the near liquid form pointlessly, some of the excess squirted out, escaping his lips. I knew what it smelled like. The boy's scent of relief was potent enough to make me lightheaded, so I couldn't imagine how he might orally ingest such a foulness. Juicy teardrops dripped down from my face while the sickly diarrhea ran off Harold's. I had to look away from it. The thought struck my brain like a hammer on a bell. The abomination sitting before me was my son. A soul stuck in a bastard version of life that wasn't compatible with societal standards. I mustered up the courage and squared my watery vision at him once again. I needed to watch it, but I didn't feel compelled to stop it. It would only serve as a band-aid. I wiped the salted water away using the back of my shaking hand. In the pits of his pupils sat obscurity, a blank state that could only be brought to life by decades of brain-frying electroshock. Harold swallowed the entire mouthful, and he looked at me and smiled. He brandished another one of his more unfathomable features, the mysterious defect that baffled any doctor I'd broached the topic with. Harold's teeth were as black as freshly laid tar and as yellow as the center lines that separated the lanes. He was born with rotten teeth. Harold finally noticed I was there, but I was too upset to reprimand him. My spirit was too broken. How could I lead him when I couldn't even lead myself? Furthermore, Harold wasn't capable of receiving the message, of correcting the obvious error of his ways. He just sat there gleefully and reached for another handful of feces, just as I had reached for the sticky doorknob handle to pull it shut.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books, purveyor of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, www.jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room Radio on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
and I'm having to phone this in because my computer hates me. I'm going to have to sacrifice and go to something to it later this evening. Maybe it's at midnight, probably a good time, so it doesn't murder me in my sleep. So Aaron's
hopefully
you weren't crapped out. I mean, I just absolutely love that reading. Speaking of crapped out, I mean, it was just on one level, it was making me feel a little bit nauseous. On another, I was feeling a bit hungry actually. But
oh my god!
You know, and it's funny. I wrote. It's actually going through another edit now. My book called "Then You Die," which is about a woman who gets involved with a fecal demon. So again, there's a lot of poop in that as well. I mean, does it make you feel sick while you're writing that, or do you enjoy it as much as I do?
It takes a lot to make me feel sick. Honestly, like, it has to get insane. And I think there might have been one story that really only bothered me when I got sick, and that is more because it was about, like, a character with pedophilic tendencies, which is not something I write about often, but I, when people ask me, is there anything you ever wrote that made you feel, like, truly messed up afterwards? I think that was probably the only thing. But
yeah,
I can go crazy.
I think we sort of get desensitized to it. I wrote a short story many, many years ago. It's in my collection, so anybody listening, go buy it. My collection, Blood and Kisses. and it's about a guy who is sort of hooked on the whole ethos of the genuine snuff video, and it gets pretty unpleasant. And like I said, that's probably my one messed me up story, because it put me in such a dark place for a good couple of days after I'd finished it. Even now, I can't read it.
Wow.
Just because not so much the, you know, the descriptive and the gore and the horror, just the underlying grimness behind it was just like, oh yeah. And I think when you can't bear to read one of your own stories, it means they've done something right, I think. is there anything you wouldn't write about, Aaron? Is there anything, obviously, anything, you know, the pedophilic characters, and that, is there anything you wouldn't broach?
No, I'm basically, like, my whole thing, and, you know, the sign that I bring to conventions with me, it says, "Welcome to horror with no boundaries." Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that any of my books that you pick up just for shits and giggles, I'm going to put the most depraved stuff in. That's not it. It has to make sense to the story. It's about the story and the characters and the writing style first and foremost. But I want, when people to pick up one of my books, to not know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? To not know, we could literally go anywhere with this. And then,
yeah,
you know, I think as long as your writing style stands up and you're consistent there, that people aren't going to be disappointed, even if you have a book that is maybe not as depraved as they're typically accustomed to, which is something I kind of experienced with the book I released prior to Son of the Slob, In the Hands of the Heathens. That's probably one of the more tame books that I've written. And it's sort of like the reader trying to figure out, is this a supernatural element to this story, or is this a slasher novel? And in comparison to a lot of the other stuff I've done, that's far more tame, I would say. But all my readers were very satisfied with it because, you know, in some of them it was their favorite book because they just enjoyed the plot and how it came together. So I think it's good to branch out and test your range.
I have to say that, you know, we have a lot of horror writers on the show, and you know, the ones who, you know, come on and they have the excerpt, and it just, I could smell some of your excerpt, if that, you know what I mean, as they're reading.
Yeah,
oh my god,
I'm
tasting
it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, but for some reason, the horror writers are, like, the most, the nicest, the nicest guests we've had. I mean, they're so grounded and so down to earth and just so nice. And I'm like, I really think that you write these horrible things and you get them out, and it's almost like a, I don't know, therapy or something. You know, I really think that, because, you know, it amazes me. It does. And then we'll have, you know, a different genre on the show, and, you know, they're just too good for us. Speaking of too good for us, yeah, James mentioned that last week we didn't have a show. I had two guests on that they were a writing team, and they were both coming on together. And then the week of the show, absolutely nothing yeah. from them. And I'm like, man, you know, they could at least say, hey, you know, we're just
yeah.
some cancer.
So they both,
there's two
they
of
both
them.
Didn't come on together, you know.
they ghosted me. It's awful. And I would call them out, but I'm too much of a lady for that. So, yeah. It's messed up, isn't it? Yeah. I love the covers that we – go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I think that's unacceptable personally, but because I think, especially as a writer, much of your persona is going to be used to promote yourself and build a brand, okay? Whether you're signed with a publisher, whether you're self-publishing, you're expected to promote. It's just part of what we do. Things like that, you know, are gonna put a tarnish on your reputation, get you stained and blacklisted. And it's like, that's why I try to make every single interaction that I have with readers, I make myself very approachable and, you know, try to be as respectful as you can, of course, with shows that are willing to give you the time of day, you know?
Definitely, because, you know, we don't get anything out of this. I mean, we have such a great time on the show, but it's not like, you know, we don't
no,
make
no, to be fair, no,
we
I'm
don't,
gonna,
you
I'm
know what I mean?
No,
we just...
Xtina, no, I'm going to correct you. This is our social life. This is the highlight of the whole week. So, yeah, we get a lot out of it. Without this, we'd be nothing.
But, I mean, you know, we have authors on, we promote their book, and we have a great time doing it. But, yeah, there's some people that, like, I was scrolling Facebook today, and I saw this author, and the boyfriend was like, who's that? I'm like, oh, her. I've only messaged her like 20 times in the last 3 years to come on her show. And she just reads my message and leaves me on read. And I'm like, seriously? You know, he's like, well, you could unfriend her. I'm like, oh, I could. So, but it's just like, you know, I don't understand why they wouldn't want to just, you know, come on the show and talk. We're wonderful people, and we have such a great time doing it. And, I mean, I do beg a free copy of the book most of the time, and sometimes I get one and sometimes I don't, but it's always worth a shot. And, you know, when you do sign that book for me, Aaron, it's XTINA.
Oh, you know, you're shameless.
But, I am, yeah. But so you have to tell us what you're working on now.
The next thing I got coming up is a collection. Now, this is the first collection that I pitched to work with other authors. Like, I want, one of my goals in this year was to collaborate. So I created a project myself, reached out to a couple people I respected. One of the authors is John Aithman, who's an extreme horror author. He has over 50 published works. He's basically America's Matt Shaw, you know. He just continues to put content out. Real good stuff, too. I read his book, Lovesick, and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, well, okay, if I decide to work with somebody, I think I'm going to put John on the list. And he's a humble guy, too. You know, we kind of wanted it to be just chill people that we're going to have a good time doing the project, no pressure. And then the other is from the UK, Jasper Bark, who wrote Stuck on You, which is a pretty awesome novella, Run to Ground. He works with Crystal Lake Publishing, another guy that's just a veteran of the writing business, and just somebody I respect. And I read Stuck on You. And, you know, I really respected his short story game after that. So I said, guys, let's come together and I pitched the project, and it's called Beyond Reform. It'll be two rather lengthy stories. They're short stories, but they're pretty beefy from each of us. And the only gimmick really is that, you know, at least one character from each story has to be beyond reform, you know, like not salvageable, completely evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that only because when I do anthologies, I very rarely do them anymore at this point. I'm kind of focused on just doing my own thing. But when I do mm-hmm. do them, I don't like to be put into a box. You know, a lot of times anthology will be like, well, it's got to be this long, and it's got to be with these set of circumstances, and it's got to be outdoors. And it's got. I just think that clogs the creative process, and I did not want to have mm-hmm. that with this anthology. I wanted these guys to be free to do whatever they want. And so I think we got an incredible product that we're going to offer. There'll be over 30 illustrations in this book. And
oh, wow.
It will be out in mid-September. I should be releasing an update with the cover art on social media very soon.
Fantastic.
Awesome. I will have to get with you behind the scenes there and see if we can maybe make you. Wow, I can't speak, and I'm only on my first glass of wine, you know. But, yeah, make a whole show of it and get, like, you know, the other authors to come on, and that would be a lot of fun. So...
Yeah,
definitely got to try
Jasper
to make that happen.
Definitely does. Yeah, Jasper's very outgoing. John's a little more antisocial. You have to kind of catch him on the right day. Annie's on Japan time too, so I don't know. That might be a little weird, but he's awesome. When he does decide to come out,
always
super humble and just a great guy.
Brilliant.
Awesome.
We will make it work.
Yeah.
Xfinity will make it work. I don't know. All that happens
yeah.
behind the scenes, and it's all beyond me, but she'll make it work.
Well, I think
sounds
that
good,
we are almost out of time for our show this evening, and I know it went by way too fast, and the next time we have you on, I'll have to make it up. We usually do it like an hour and a half when we have two guests, but, you know, we could talk to you for even longer because we need more of the slop, because that was just it was colorful. It was very, very colorful.
Colorful. Yes, it was. It was well read as well, I have to say.
But, Aaron, tell us where we can find you online.
All my books are available on Amazon, of course. I am very hands-on customer service oriented. As far as, like, any kind of readers that have questions, feel free to reach out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever it might be. I answer questions. And I also I have tons of different merchandise, whether it be signed prints, bookmarks, coasters, keychains, fridge magnets, signed copies. I do all different kinds of packages. It's something that I've noticed that readers – really do appreciate. They often, I was surprised. I thought it was kind of a standard thing that authors would sell signed copies, but they're very appreciative of the variety of stuff. And I would like to also just say thank you to everyone that has supported me, and also to Hellbound for publishing some of my earlier short stories.
Definitely. Thank you. I was going to say, if you are in the market to, write for an anthology, we're always looking. And that's definitely, I did want to say about Hellbound, you know, we kind of just let the authors do whatever with it when it comes to the anthologies. And, you know, there isn't always it says that we, you know, a certain word count, but we're really flexible. So, you know, basically whatever, you know, it depends on the story, you know, because some stories are a lot, you know, shorter and a lot longer. So we're very flexible. I want to put that out there.
Yeah,
but,
that
thank
was something
you so
that
much.
I was,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Last thing I was going to say is just to agree with you. That was something that I was attracted to when I submitted my stories initially, was that
the
themes for the anthologies were not so rigid. And it does say in the word count, you know, that you're very flexible. So basically what you just said, it actually says it right there too. So
I thank you so much for coming on the show. And I think we lost James. So if we did, he thanks you as well. And So, yeah, thank you so much, and I can't wait to have you back on. And this would be the time of the show when James says, you know, it's time to say goodnight, Xtina. So, goodnight, Xtina.
All right, have a great night. Thanks for having me.
Night-night.
Bye.
Pretend you're happy when you're blue. It isn't very hard to do. We'll find happiness without an end if you pretend. Remember, anyone can dream, and nothing's bad as it may seem. The little things you haven't got could be a lot if you pretend. Find a love you can share, one you can call your own. Just close your eyes, you'll be there. You'll never be alone. And if you sing this melody, you'll be pretending just like me. World is mine, it can be yours, my friend. So why don't you like me. The world is mine.